Hey, it's the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and with me is a guy who makes the markets move even more than Jay Powell does. Steve, welcome to the podcast.
That is my claim to fame, John. How are you?
Good. Excited to have a great guest with us this week. We have Ryan George, the Chief Marketing Officer at DocuPace. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah. Well, you guys are kind of in an interesting area that's growing up pretty quick, it seems like. Wealth management doesn't seem to get all the hype that some of the other areas in fintech do these days. Kind of in the middle of a lot of changes. Can you tell us what DocuPace is up to these days and how it's facing the markets these days?
Yeah, absolutely. So you're right. There are a lot of changes. You know, so overall in the wealth management industry, we have been, let's just say, a paper-based industry for some time. If you've ever opened a wealth management account, it's not dissimilar from, you know, your typical mortgage application where you have piles of paper and signatures here and signatures there and a lot to read through. That's historically how the business has worked. You know, a lot of face-to-face interaction with an advisor who's then within a client who's asking them to, you know, sign a stack of 30 pages in order to open an account. And that hasn't been, you know, it doesn't connect with the modern client. It also doesn't connect with the legacy client either. So COVID really pushed this sort of digital transformation, which is a term you hear a lot, but I actually think it applies well here in terms of digital transforming the business into being more virtual, being more digital, and being more modern in how we function. So DocuPace, being a cloud provider of back office software, which I'll simplify that as saying, we help open accounts, account maintenance, anything that ties to a CRM or ties to a custodian or ties to other technology that we provide automated workflows and streamline way to do so. So we essentially try to make the work more accurate, try to make it work faster, and try to automate it from point to point. So there's less errors, less corrections needed, and less, for lack of a better word, friction in the system.
Yeah, automating this area, along with other areas in the financial industry, has been one of the key goals of a lot of companies out there. What are you guys doing that's different from some of the other solutions out there, or even like the large players like Morgan Stanley?
Sure. So, you know, I think one of the things that sets DocuPace apart is we're sort of agnostic to other technologies that you want to work with. So we've invested heavily in integrations with other core systems like CRMs, like Salesforce, Redtail, Wealthbox, or other major CRMs that you'll often see wealth management firms use, as well as the custodians. So we also integrate with every major custodian. So we're agnostic to how you want to do business, who you want to do business with. We sit in the middle and make sure that point A, that, you know, the business gets from point A to point B. So we provide that flexibility for a firm who can be a little bit more portable and can sort of plug in and plug out different technologies that they would like. So that's one major point that I think makes us different. I think also, if you look at like any sort of landscape map of technology that's in the sort of the wealth tech space, I mean, you'll see hundreds and if not thousands of companies that offer, you know, a solution here, a solution there. And I think one of the things that DocuPace has really set itself on being is not an all-in-one solution, but more of a best-in-one solution in terms of what we offer. We know what we want to be. We know what we don't want to be. But we're also more than just a point solution that solves a single problem.
Take care of the whole widget. So it's you can just start your investment business and this takes care of the back end for you.
Yes. Yeah, so we would... The
reporting, the accounting. It looks like you guys have made some acquisitions to cover all those gaps and to cover all the bases, basically.
So back office processing, yes. So we wouldn't cover the finance area, but we would cover the client interactions that you would need to open an account, move the account in the right direction, provide, you know, digital experience to a client to get them to attest that they've received the disclosure that's needed, or to send, send from the field into the home office. You know, the paperwork as well. So it's that connectivity that we provide.
You guys take some risk on the compliance side with making sure things are done the right way. I mean, like how much of the local state laws do you guys have to field?
Sure.
As so, part of this?
Yeah. Sure. So we do follow, we do follow the, you know, where we are, while we are not directly regulated by the SEC or FINRA because we're a technology company, the clients that we serve definitely are. So, you know, we have the configurations that help meet those requirements, whether it's, you know, we are part of the approved vendor list and have been for some time, with basically meeting their cybersecurity standards and as well as the sort of this security standards that they have. But one of the things about our system is we configure it to match however the system, if they want to be a very risk mitigated system firm, we can modify our system to do so. If they're less, you know, need to align to their compliance, like take for instance, an RA business has generally less requirements than maybe a wirehouse business or a broker dealer business. Our system can be configured to actually match and align with the regulatory framework in which they're looking to do business in.
So the fintech market is in a bit of a downturn lately. Rounds are coming in at much lower valuations, certainly less money going into fintechs these days. How long have you guys been around? Does this really affect you anymore? You're beyond needing capital?
Sure. So, I mean, every business is going to be affected by a market downturn as broad as this one. So DocuPace, we're celebrating our 21st year in business. So we are... we're sort of a 20-year-old business that is behaving like a startup. And the reason that we're behaving like a startup...
A geriatric startup.
Okay. Geriatric startup, that's right. But we're nimble. We're nimble. Just kidding. Just had to throw that... as the marketing guy, I had to throw the buzzwords in, right?
Synergies. It's all about synergies.
Yes, we got a growth synergies. We got a growth investment from a private equity firm called FDB Capital in April 2020. And what that really has done is began a process of standing the business on its head. So we had, been a two-decade-long business, and we've really transformed ourselves, how we behave, the maturation of our sort of how we operate, but also how we pursue. So we've been growing consistently. Last year was our fifth straight year of double-digit revenue growth, which is something that we're really proud of. We're also still hiring, which is also something we're really proud of, as you see, you know, lots and lots of announcements of you know, massive layoffs within the tech sector. But we're proud about sort of being good stewards of our business, managing expenses to, you know, revenue growth as it is. And also, you know, using stuff like the market downturn as an opportunity to perhaps acquire new capabilities or a new business and be agile that way. And on the acquiring side, from a business who may be looking to expand themselves as well.
You know, I should say you're a geriatric startup, you know, with 20 years in the market, but you've actually raised $70 million, right? What's been the journey, and what's sort of the next step in the DocuPace story then?
Sure. So, you know, DocuPace has interesting history. So, starting off way back in the early 2000s with sort of a broad document storage, document management process, in the late 2000s, really focusing in on wealth management. And then we took long before I was ever a part of the company, so I took an investment from a firm that ended up sort of blowing up and not ending up well. So the company went back to sort of the startup mode and raised itself out of, you know, a broad bankruptcy, which then grew for several years until we ended up getting this latest injection. So that growth investment. So we've sort of...
So nothing focuses the mind and the strategy like a near bankruptcy.
Yeah, so I was pulling it. So what happened was, if they've ever heard of a firm called RCS Capital, you could look it up. It was a firm that had purchased DocuPace as a way to, streamline and a lot of investments they had been making in wealth management. There was some, they were tied to a real estate, real estate investment trust company that ended up going bankrupt, which had pulled DocuPace into it. DocuPace pulled it out of bankruptcy. And really, the reason, it was because we still had a successful business that stood on its own. So while the parent company had trouble, DocuPace was a valuable business in a viable business in terms of delivering, successful products, successful platform to its customers. And so, you know, we got back to work, plugging away, providing to our customers, and then continue to grow our customer base from there. At this stage, what we're really looking at is expansion. So we've just moved in 2022. We moved pretty hard into serving the RIA market. We've historically served the enterprise broker-dealer firms, and we'll continue to break out into, the bank channel, the trust channel, as well as looking at overseas markets as they make sense.
Can you give me a sense of how large is this market?
I'll take the RIA market, for instance. There's over 20,000 or so wealth management-focused RIAs. Now, the broad majority of those are within, I would say, small 1 to 2 to 3 advisor firms. But there's over 3,000 or so that we think are in our target market. That could be buyers of our solutions and really be viable partners of ours. So that's one size of it. The bank channel is something that we, you know, as we're seeing, you know, trends within the bank and the credit union space, looking to find sticky ways to make customer deposits stickier and to provide additional services is wealth management. So what we can do is take, you know, if they're looking to stand up or mature that wealth management side of their business, we can help do so by through our platform. So that's a big expansion for us. You know, Canada is a market that we see a lot of opportunity with. It's a few years behind the maturation of the U.S. wealth management market, similar with the U.K. But both of those are markets that are needing to mature itself in order to really institutionalize the independent advisor market, which we think is a trend that will be a global trend, not just a U.S. trend.
So what kind of a trends are you seeing in terms of people investing? I guess it affects like the kinds of things like you would need to support, like cryptocurrencies or...
It's all NFTs. It's only NFTs.
direct indexing, sure. Kind of products, that type of thing. I imagine you always have to be building new technology solutions.
Yeah, so we've seen a bit of growth in just general volumes. We haven't measured specific account applications, meaning like this is in ESG funds and this is in, you know, other tax shelters funds. That we don't have that type of data. But I can tell you that our volumes have increased substantially each year, starting from before the pandemic. And I think part of that is, one, there's a lot more people that are the sort of overall addressable market for the wealth management business in general. It's pretty large, starting all the way sort of with Gen Z into millennials into you know, Gen X and baby boomers and beyond. The market is very vast and the need is very great. As you can see, I saw in news today or yesterday that during last year was the highest rate of hardship withdrawals of 401ks than in a year in recorded history. Wow. And that just shows that the need for financial planning services and wealth management services is vast. So it's very broad. And we're seeing the pickup in account applications because hopefully the business is doing a good job of making itself show its viability to, you know, people with, you know, doesn't really matter the sum of money, but people who are seeking, you know, professional guidance in order to create a sound financial plan.
What's your sense of the percentage of Americans that actually have a wealth planner or a wealth manager? And what would you say is sort of the threshold that you have to achieve before you're able to use the services?
So the last I checked, or at least the most recent survey, it's somewhere around a third. So a third of adults, a third of households have some sort of professional advice, whether it's somebody they meet with once a year, you know, which is low. I wish it would be better, but we can get to that in a minute. What's really scary is I've seen over 80% of Gen Z believes that they're getting their financial advice from TikTok. I have to bring up
social media,
which is very scary. There was a recent study, a story around the turn of the year about some you know, wealth management influencers who were giving stock ideas and were basically was a pump and dump scheme. And you're seeing those pop up all over social media, which is terrifying for me, for somebody who
Kim Kardashian said this was a good idea.
Yes, well, that goes into the ETFs thing, and I think. It's the Wild West in terms of how that those messages are regulated. And that, you know, unfortunately, some of these blowups are actually shining a light that the need is vast and the need is now in order to terms to control how some of that is done. So that's sort of the market for advice today. In terms of how much money you need for an advisor, I think that's actually one of the biggest misnomers is a lot of people say, well, I need to have $500,000 saved or I need to have $250,000 saved or more. Finding an advisor isn't necessarily something that you're going to meet with every day. My wife and I work with an advisor. At this point in our lives, we meet with him once a year, and it's just a check-in. But if we need something, we have that ability to plug into him and you know, ask him and his partners questions if we need to. So it's almost like an ad hoc on-demand service. And we don't have anywhere near that type of money that was saved away. And so I think it's more about what's the responsibility you have with your, you know, financial planning sense. And what do you want to do with it? And I think that's, you know, anybody really has a use case to work with an advisor. It's just finding the right engagement model for the advisors to where it makes sense for the advisor, it makes sense for the client, and isn't either, the scale isn't tilted too far in either one's direction, if that makes sense.
Interesting. And in terms of the threshold that you need in terms of either wealth or income or cash. At what level would you say that most folks would have to speak to a professional to handle their finances?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say. I think the biggest thing that any financial advisor would do, at least the first steps, it would be somebody who's looking to put their affairs in order. So, you know, life insurance, wills, trusts, other things like that, to make sure that if they were, you know, something tragic were to happen, they're protected. You know, so it could be anywhere with, you know, six-figure savings. I think the first thing to do is just once they've taken advantage of all the tax advantage opportunities they have within their company's 401k, then it might make sense to work with an advisor to sort of, but most advisors, on first step, take advantage of all your tax advantaged opportunities, because that's where they're, you know, 99.9 advisors would tell you to begin anyways.
Yeah, I think I know what my financial advisor would say if I had one. Nothing. You don't have anything. You're not giving me anything to work with here.
But you know, what's funny about it, John?
But yeah, you're right. You're right. There's other issues involved in terms of like you were saying, your wills and health planning and that type of thing, that are not just investing X dollars into Y stock.
It's actually part of, I think, what is the biggest transformation of the business that's been happening over time. But now I think we're actually getting to a more interesting tipping point of it, is if you think back to, say, the 80s and 90s, when people think of a financial advisor, they think of blue shirt, white collar, slick back hair, you know, giving you stock picks. They think of that as a financial advisor because access to those types of investments were really limited to those type of gatekeepers. Get into the 2000s, and that's the rise of sort of the Ameritrades, the other online brokerages that were giving E-Trade and those Scottrade that were giving access to investments, but not necessarily advising on those investments. Now, I think we're at the point where even the advising on the investments is somewhat old hat because of the tools and technologies that are available within the fintech, wealth tech space, to where an advisor is really there to be that empathetic source of guidance. To say, you know, when you call them up and say, should I sell? They're the ones that a human voice that says no and can talk you off the ledge and explain why. And really, or, you know, should I spend $20,000 because my Eagles are in the Super Bowl on tickets, and say no, and here's why. And I think that's something that it's not necessarily what you think you would get when you're working with an independent advisor.
Yeah. Pretty interesting. You know, I just saw some articles recently, and I'm sorry to build up on the hype, but as ChatGPT technology being used to assist or not necessarily replace financial advisors and providing information that's understandable through that kind of technology, do you see like the kind of demand for that type of AI for your partners?
So I don't, and it's a shame, and here's why. I think a lot of times when new technologies come, people have this, maybe it's human behavior or what, but I see it repeatedly, that there's a fear that comes with new technology. That when a new technology is released, they think, oh, it's going to replace my job. It's going to replace my expertise. It's going to replace what I do, the value I deliver. And that's no different in the financial advisor, wealth management space. I think what a future-minded advisor would think is, how can I use this in my practice to make it better? And I think stuff like ChatGPT and other AI technology, when married with the empathetic human brain and with the skills of an experienced advisor, actually can slingshot your firm way forward from the rest of the competition. However, humans and advisors have been slow historically to glom onto those tools and really build them in their practice. So we'll just have to wait and see how open they are to adjusting their business or adjusting, you know, different things like marketing or different things about communication, that those tools can really add a lot of value, especially in a personalization basis, but yet aren't necessarily being broadly used.
Yeah, there is that immediate fear factor. But yeah, a lot of the use cases and like Satya Nadella was saying, for example, is it just improves your productivity. And we should see it as a more useful tool than a threat, and find ways to use it. So yeah, exactly what the response I've been hearing from some of the tech leaders as well.
Yeah, yep. One thing I'd add to that too, I think that is somewhat of a challenge in terms of adoption, is because this space, and I know it's not unlike other professional services and other sort of professional white collar roles, you know, across industries, there's been a lot of technology to adopt, a lot of technology to swallow and to learn to do your job effectively, you know, over a number of years. And so you're seeing this pile of new knowledge I need to know or new ways I need to apply to do my bit in my business better. And I think sometimes those technologies that aren't as tangible to somebody who's maybe not a technologist, I think they're a little bit out of their reach and far today. So all you just need to see is how you know, somebody come up with a smart application that can be easily applied to a behavior that's already happening. And I think that's when you'll see a huge tick up in usage.
So you mentioned kind of like, well, a little bit of like this education challenge. What are some of the other obstacles when you're signing up a new client or things that you wish they would understand better or that people knew before it, when you're talking to them to sign them up?
Sure. So generally people come to us when they need to centralize and streamline a process. And say, for instance, it's a wealth manager who works with 100 advisors in the field, right? 100 offices in the field. And each one of those 100 offices has a different process for facilitating business and then sending it into this centralized office. Well, with our system, we could create a single process that every 100 of those firms in the field would use in order to submit business to the central office. However, that means at least 100 people, whether it's an administrative assistant or operations person or an advisor, has to change how they've been doing business in order for it to align with how the new way of doing business. And so I think changing human behavior is always going to be our biggest challenge. I think one of the things that has historically plagued DocuPace and has been less of an issue today and will continue to be less of an issue tomorrow and beyond is we have over-customized our platform. I'm sure you hear this a lot with different companies to match a client need or of today or client need of the moment. And what that done is sacrificed perhaps the streamlining of overall client experience across the board. So, you know, we're looking to provide more configuration versus customization in terms of what a client needs and actually understand what those needs are, but also how those needs may change over time.
So like that fear of change and doing things in a completely different way, even if it's more efficient, you have to overcome the human hurdle.
Yes. And I mean, that's going to be a general, I think that challenge is around forever, at least for the time being. So I think where it's upon us and upon the people who purchase our technology is to really make the case for why. What will this technology unlock you to do instead of doing that, right? So what is it going to empower you to do instead? Not replace your job, but what doors is it going to open for you to go do more of that may be more interesting or more empowering for you?
Oh, I see. Yeah, that makes sense. With on your website, you have like savings calculator.
Yes.
In there, so you can make you can see some tangible results.
Yes, that's correct. So that's, you know, one of the things is just the sheer print and mail cost that we could save, and also the cost of time of, you know, reading, you know, receiving a packet of 40 pieces of paper and having to go and process those yourself versus having it manually done through a formless process that captures the information and routes it into the right fields.
Well, the admins are the ones that are really trying to shoot you down when you're trying to make a deal.
they are both our.
Well, he's busy again. Sorry, Ryan, he can't get through to you.
Yeah, they are our biggest net promoters, but also some of the people who are going to weather some of the biggest change in their process. So we have to hold their hands as best as possible going throughout the process.
Well, it really just means that they'll be working on more high value stuff, right? Not just pushing paper around.
Correct.
That's the idea. That's a sale. Yeah.
We want your brains, not your hands. Yeah.
Exactly. Stop doing all that other non-essential stuff. Yeah. But I'm wondering, Ryan, taking a bit of a higher view at the space. You mentioned the effect of kind of configuring versus customizing stuff, and the changes that you've also seen in the space. What would you say are the biggest trends that we have to look forward to in 2023 in the wealth management space?
Oh, good question. Tell us the future.
What's the future, Ryan?
Hold on. Let me pull out my crystal ball. There we go. I think you're going to see a more acceleration. So I think the margins continue to compress. I think in a world where if you back up some, the market has gone up and gone up and gone up and gone up, and over years up until last year. And what that does is hides a lot of mistakes. It hides a lot of expenses that maybe aren't needed. And so you're going to, I think we are now in the year of, or a couple of years of optimization, winning a, you know, a smart, savvy business leader is going to look across the board where they're spending money and trying to find, make sure that they're getting the right value for that dollar spent. And that could be in humans and technology and partnerships, what have you. So I think in the, on the end of this, you're going to see a lot of sort of trimming of the fat in terms of business, which is good. It's what you're seeing in technology right now. It's painful, but a lot of these businesses maybe got a little bit bloated and what and ambitious in what they're trying to do. I think the same
it sounds
thing.
Just like Facebook, actually, right? It sounds
yes, and they're one of many companies where when the trend is up and up and up, I think you can get maybe a little loose and have your target, the breadth of which you can miss the target expands. And a market where we're at today with high inflation, you know, uncertainty within a political sphere, uncertainty within the economy, you know, the variance that a management or manager of a business CEO can weather is pretty small. Volatility is the enemy. So I think you're going to find a retraction in terms of taking big chances. However, I think for the firm that actually does the research, modernizes how they work and how they function, whether they use DocuPace or not is sort of irrelevant. But if they sort of build a modern backbone of their business, that when everything turns and we go up again, which we know eventually will, they'll be the ones that really poised to really shoot forward.
So what's the limitation to growth right now? Does DocuPace just need to hire more people, or just takes time to build things out, more capital? What's the limiting factor that you'd love to get rid of?
So the limiting factor I'd love to get rid of is time. I think we have the right people, which, you know, I just read something about some, scientists are believing that time is a part of our imagination. Different construct, which I don't have time to go into today, but I'm curious about that because I've always been wondering how I can get more time. But I do think we have got a bunch of great people, that I'm proud to go to work with every day. And I think we finally got it right in terms of chemistry, workload, balance, and people understanding where we're heading. The challenge is we got to make sure we don't get distracted for the little opportunities that pop up each day and that can take us off our path. And I think, you know, we have 123 or so people. That's 123 people being able to ignore the tyranny of the urgent and keep on path for the direction that we're heading. However, the caveat to that is also be able to recognize good opportunities, significant opportunities that may pop up along the way. So it's like on one hand saying, oh, we only want to go this direction, but keep your eyes out in case something big pops up. And so understanding that balance, I think, is a challenge that most companies our size have of trying to go from, medium size to up in revenue and up in channels and up in clients. There's a lot that we're doing and making sure that we're giving our people the right resources and right guidance to do so, because they're working hard, I think, is an important part of what we do. And as CMO, I have to say, I'd always like more budget for marketing, right? You know, that's
because it provides a solid return. Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
ROI is well documented.
Yeah. Do you think fintechs or even smaller companies as they're growing up don't realize the value of a chief marketing officer?
No. I mean, I think
you're the first chief marketing officer we've had here in, I don't know, ever, but certainly in a while.
Well, I hope I'm meeting the standards. I can give a report card later. One of the things that I think is important with marketing is my role is not just about marketing. My role is to, what I see it as, is really be sort of the State Department for our business. So to partner with every internal department or external partner to make sure that we're presenting DocuPace in the way and working as a partnership in tandem with them to help them be successful. So, you know, there's very little that my team does that is solely combined in our team, right? So our successes are us plus successes. So whether it's a sales team success or a product team success. And I think that's where finding somebody who can deliver that is probably where you get the most return from a marketer. I'd also say the partnership with top leadership, like a CEO who understands the direction that you're trying to go and the value you provide, I think is critical for any marketer as well, because if the CEO or the board doesn't understand what you're doing or why you're doing it, it's going to be really hard to sort of to show your worth.
Great, great. Some great advice and some lots of interesting information. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Hey, this is a lot of fun. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. That's Ryan George, the Chief Marketing Officer at DocuPace. And you know he's marketing because we have our checked books out, writing checks to invest and buy DocuSpace now.
I sure do.
So please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news. And thank you for listening.